Very little in our world invites us to rest. We rush here and there, we're pressed to make on-the-spot decisions. Rarely do we ever stop or listen or reflect or think. Hi, I'm Bill Wright. And you know, just this morning I was sitting on the freeway and I thought how badly we all need a rest. Well, if you can identify, then join us, won't you, for the next few minutes in our study on the Mini Bible College of the most restful book in the Bible, the Psalms.
Now we come to my favorite book of the Bible, the book of Psalms. The book of Psalms was the hymn book of the people of God. And if you open your hymn book in your church today, you can see some similarities between the hymn book in your church pew and the book of Psalms. Now you may say, but the book of Psalms doesn't have all those notes and things. Well, it doesn't because they didn't have those in those days. But you will find some musical characteristics in the book of Psalms if you're looking for them. For instance, in the Psalms you have inscriptions that precede many Psalms. You'll notice that Psalm 4, 5, and 6 has in its inscription words like Neginoth and Nehiloth. And if you look those words up, they're Hebrew words that suggest that the Psalm should be accompanied to wind instruments, that's Nehiloth, or string instruments, Neginoth. And the word Shimoneth in Psalm 6 in the inscription means an octave lower. So these were the instructions to the musicians who were going to accompany the singing of these great hymns. The word Selah, which is found throughout the Psalms, means stop and think about it, or the Living Bible says pause and think reverently about that. It was almost like the musical rest in our music today. Now, as you open your hymn book, if you're not into music theory, and you just ignore the notes and read the words to the hymns, you'll discover that you're reading some of the most beautiful poetry that's ever been written. When you come to the book of Psalms, you'll discover, if you ignore all these instructions to the musical people, that you're reading the most beautiful inspired poetry that has probably ever been written. Now, if you look in your hymn book, or if you read the psalmist, you'll discover that the hymn writer or the psalmist is usually doing one of three things. Sometimes the psalmist or the hymn writer is talking to God about God, and that is praise. Sometimes the psalmist or the hymn writer is talking to God about man, and that is prayer. And sometimes, if you read the words to the hymn or the psalm, you'll discover that the psalmist or the hymn writer isn't talking to God at all. He's talking to man about God, and that's preaching. So sometimes the hymn writer or the psalmist is praising because he's talking to God about God, or sometimes he's praying because he's talking to God about man, usually himself, and sometimes he's talking to man about God. He's preaching, in other words. In the book of Psalms, you find in the 150 Psalms that sometimes the psalmist is talking to God about God, sometimes he's talking to God about man, and sometimes he's talking to man about God. Now, if you can get onto this and always ask the question when you read the words to a psalm or a hymn, to whom is he speaking and about whom, I think that will begin your appreciation of the message or the content of the psalm. Now, in the book of Psalms, in addition to what we said, you'll discover certain themes that run through the Psalms. The most common theme, and the definitive theme probably of the book of Psalms, is what we call the blessed man theme. This is the happiness is theme. The blessed man theme, as it runs through the Psalms, you'll discover, will always tell you something like this. The blessings of the blessed man are not an accident. They're not a coincidence, they're not by chance, but they are a banquet of consequences. I love that quote by Robert Louis Stevenson, where he said, "Soon or late, every man must sit down to a banquet of consequences." Now that's what these blessed man psalms will tell you about the blessed man. Why is he blessed? And why is he the blessed man? It's not by chance, it's not by coincidence, it's not an accident. His blessings are a banquet of consequences. His blessings are the result of his choices, and his choices are the result of his convictions. And this is why he's blessed. That will be spelled out in these Blessed Man Psalms. Now, another theme that runs through the Psalms, and you can look for these as you read the Psalms, might be called the emotional or experiential theme. Many of these Psalms will describe an emotional climate. I don't know what your emotional climate may be as you come to the book of Psalms, but I can guarantee this. Whatever your emotional climate is, you will discover that emotional climate somewhere in the book of Psalms. If you're depressed, you'll come up on Psalms where the hymn writer or the psalmist is depressed. If you're uptight, if you're under great stress, you'll discover Psalms where he's uptight and under great stress. You'll meet yourself emotionally in the Psalms. Now, when you come up on these Psalms, here's the way to get the benefit from these Psalms. When you discover that the psalmist is experiencing a certain emotional climate, which you are experiencing or often experience, ask yourself this question. What did he do about it? What did he do about his depression or his stress or his fear or whatever his emotional climate might have been? And then, of course, let him be your example. And perhaps you can do the same thing and find your way out of that emotional climate if it's not a favorable one. Now, an example of these emotional experiential psalms would be Psalms 3, 4, 34, 51, and 55. Now, another type of psalm, and this is a definitive type of psalm also, is the worship psalm. When he's talking to God about God, that's worship, that's praise. Now, if you look through your hymn book, depending, of course, upon whether your church is liturgical or not, you may discover that there aren't very many hymns in your hymn book that talk to God about God. I think you may discover a lot of hymns that talk to God about man. You may discover a lot of preachman hymns that are talking to man about God. But you may find a scarcity in your hymn book of hymns that talk to God about God. You won't find a scarcity of that in the Psalms. There are many Psalms where the psalmist is talking to God about God. And in these so-called worship Psalms, I believe he's not only, worshiping, but if you read the worship Psalms carefully, he will show you what worship is. He'll show you how to worship. He'll show you what's supposed to happen when you worship. And especially, he will show you the results of worship. Look for that as you read the worship Psalms. Now, laced in with these Blessed Man Psalms and these emotional Psalms and these worship Psalms, you'll find some prayers that they call the imprecatory prayers. Right in the middle of a very devotional psalm, he'll start praying about his enemies, and he'll say the most unkind things about those enemies, and he'll ask God to slaughter his enemies for him. And you may wonder, you sort of feel like, tilt, something's gone wrong here. This doesn't seem to fit. And you have to remember that he was writing 1,000 years on the other side of the Sermon on the Mount. The going ethic then was, love your neighbor, but hate your enemy. And so you'll find David, after expressing beautiful devotional thoughts, saying, do I not hate those that hate thee? I hate them with a perfect hatred, and I beat them into pieces like the dust of the earth with my sword. And he'll ask God to give him the power to do that. Well, I think you need a little historical perspective to understand those imprecatory prayers that are interlaced with these devotional psalms. Another theme that runs through the psalms is what you might call the messianic psalm. The psalmist, who is often David, will write prophetically. And some of the psalms, especially 16 and 22 and 8 and 2, will give us prophetic psalms about the Messiah. On the day of Pentecost, when Peter preached his great Pentecostal sermon, he said that David was a prophet. And he preached there on the day of Pentecost from Psalm 16, which predicted the resurrection of Jesus Christ, not just the first advent of Jesus Christ, but specifically his resurrection. And some of these psalms will show that David not only foretold, like the prophets did, but he foretold both the second and the first advent of Jesus. Now, remember we said when we were in the historical books that the historical setting for the Psalms will often come in 1 and 2 Samuel and Chronicles, because about 73 of these Psalms were written by David, we feel. Many are anonymous that could have also been written by David. But since there's so much biographical material about David in 1 and 2 Samuel, The books of 1 and 2 Samuel will often give you an historical setting for Psalms, and sometimes that will be the key to the interpretation and the application of the Psalm. Just as the book of Acts gives you the historical background for the letters of Paul, and just as the historical books gives you the setting for the prophets, 1 and 2 Samuel especially will give you a historical setting for the Psalms. It's important to realize that. Now, even before the Bible, the Old Testament Bible, was translated into Greek about 200 years before Jesus, they call that the Septuagint, the book of Psalms was divided up into five separate books. And those five books were like from Psalm 1 to 41, from 42 to 72, from 73 to 90, and from 90 to 107. Now, 73 of these Psalms, as we said, have been attributed to David. Asaph is accredited with 12, the sons of Korah with 11. They say Hezekiah wrote 10, and then Moses, Ezra, and Solomon each wrote 1. And as we said, many are anonymous, and they're probably written by Levites, who were the ministers of music who worked with David, and many of the anonymous Psalms also could have been written by David. I would like to do a close-up of some of these Psalms that I feel are definitive of the areas that I've mentioned. I would like for us to begin by considering the preachment Psalms, because you'll find that probably most of your favorite Psalms are the Psalms where the psalmist is talking to man about God. He's preaching. He's telling you about his God. Now, there are 1,189 chapters in the Bible. Here is my favorite chapter, Psalm 23. I believe this is the greatest chapter in the Bible. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters. He restoreth my soul. He leadeth me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thou preparest the table before me in the presence of mine enemies. Thou anointest my head with oil, my cup runneth over. Surely, goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Now, this is obviously a preachment psalm, isn't it? To whom is he speaking and about whom? Well, he's speaking to us, and he's speaking to us about his God. He's speaking to man about God, so he's preaching primarily here in this psalm. Someone has said that this psalm is sheep talk because the sheep is the one who's talking. You picture a little sheep looking out through a fence in a pasture, and what he's really saying is, let me tell you about my shepherd. Boy, because of the shepherd I've just got everything. I've got green pastures. I've got still waters. My cup runs over all the time. I know the paths in which I walk are the right paths. And I know that goodness and mercy is going to follow me every day of my life. And then after this life is over, I'm going to dwell with my shepherd. And all of this is true because of who my shepherd is. You see, this is a blessed man psalm. This is the blessed man. This is the epitome of the blessed man. He's got it all. What are the things that you want most out of life? Well, green pastures. That symbolizes the material things that we all want. Well, he says, I've got those. I've got green pastures. Now, many people have green pastures with colitis and ulcers, but he says, I've got green pastures with the still waters. I've got still waters. I've got peace along with my green pastures. There are very few people who are convinced that what they're doing with their life is the right thing to do with their life. I'm amazed at how few people feel really sure that they're doing what they're supposed to be doing with their life. But the psalmist here in Psalm 23, he says, I know that the paths in which I'm walking are the right paths, the paths of righteousness. I know that. And he says that his cup is running over, which is happiness. Everybody wants to be happy. I remember seeing some hippies back in the 60s who had a plaque over their bed in their bedroom, and it said, happiness is happiness. Remember when we had the happiness is craze? Like happiness is finding the pacifier at 2 o'clock in the morning, or happiness is this or it's that. Happiness is something that's supposed to make you happy that probably doesn't make you happy. Well, the hippies said, happiness is happiness. And really, that's true. Happiness is when you're happy. Now, really, this is what the psalmist is telling us here in Psalm 23. He's happy because his cup runs over all the time. Now, if you look at this blessed man here as he's pictured in this sheep in Psalm 23 and say, well, what is the key to that? I want to be happy like that. I'd like to have all those things. What's the key? Well, the key is the opening statement of the psalm. The Lord is my shepherd. Now, as long as he can say, the Lord is my shepherd, he can say, I've got it all. Green pastures, still waters, the cup that runs over, the paths of righteousness, the whole thing. I have all of these things because the Lord is my shepherd. This is a great statement. This statement, the Lord is my shepherd, is really saying two things. It's telling us about God and how we perceive God, but it's also telling us something about how we perceive ourselves, because this opening statement, the Lord is my shepherd, is also saying, I am a sheep. Now, I've had people say, that's a terrible thing to say about a human being. If you know anything about sheep management and you know anything about sheep at all, it's a terrible thing to say I'm a sheep. I've had people say, especially very successful people, I'm no sheep and I don't need a shepherd. I've never had a problem I couldn't solve. Now, on occasions like that, I've often said to people, may I pray for you? And after praying for them for about 2 years, it's amazing how many times I would find myself in a man's office and he'd be saying, you know, for the first time in my life, I don't know what to do. I've got a problem I can't solve. I remember one man who was a car dealer. He said, I've got a whole lot full of big Oldsmobiles out there and I can't move them. When the energy crunch came, he said, I can't move those automobiles. I just don't know what to do. And he was a man who had said he didn't need a shepherd. And I remember saying to him, maybe this would be a good time to say, bah, this might be a good time to admit that you need a shepherd. I remember once I was getting up very early and my wife woke up and she said, where are you going? And I said, well, I read in this book, this old Puritan scholar said, when you wake up, get up. And when you get up, do something for God and his lambs. And she said, bah. And she reminded me that she and the children were one of those, too. As I remember, we took a week off and went to New York on that occasion. Well, I believe Psalm 23 is telling us, the Lord is my shepherd and I am a sheep. This is a confession of two things. Now, this psalm is saying, that's the key to all my blessings. The Lord is my shepherd. As long as I can say, the Lord is my shepherd and I'm a sheep, the pastures are green, the waters are still, the cup runs over. But then he tells us, if you go on in the psalm, how that relationship is established with God. Because that would be your next question. If you find out that this is the key to all those blessings, the Lord is my shepherd, the next question is, well, how can he become my shepherd? Well, he tells you that in verse 2. He says, he maketh me to lie down. Now, if you know anything about sheep management, you know how the shepherd makes the sheep lie down. The shepherd carried two things, a staff and a rod. The rod was like a club with which he protected the sheep. He used that on predators, but the staff was what he used on the sheep. One end of the staff was crooked, and the other end was wide and blunt and weighted. And he used that to whack the sheep right over the head between the horns and say, lie down. I once heard a story about a rookie in the police academy who was real good at hand-to-hand combat. And he went to the instructor when the course was over because he was at the top of the class. And he said, you know, I really want to get better at this. How can I get better? And the instructor said, well, you need experience. And the rookie said, well, how can I get experience? And the instructor said, well, go out in the country and beat up on some old farmer. So he went out in the country and this farmer was coming out of his barn. The rookie went up to the farmer and the farmer said, howdy. The rookie said, howdy. And he gave him a karate chop on the side of the neck. And the farmer was knocked to his knees and he shook his head and he said, what was that? And the rookie said, that's karate from Korea, man. And the farmer said, well, I declare. And he got up and started for the barn. And the rookie hit him on the back of the neck with another punch, knocked him down in the straw. And he came to in about 30 seconds. He said, what was that? And the rookie said, that's judo from Japan, man. And the farmer said, hold everything. And he went into the barn watching the rookie. And when he came out, he had something behind his back, and he hit the rookie over the head with it. And 30 minutes later, the rookie came to, and the farmer was standing over him, And the rookie said, "What was that?" And the farmer said, "Crowbar from Sears and Roebuck." Well, I believe in Psalm 23, verse 2, that's what's being described. If you know anything about sheep management, you see, in order for the Lord to become our shepherd, he has to make us lie down. And he usually does that by giving us problems we can't solve. That's the crowbar from Sears and Roebuck, right between the horns, right over the head. That's how he gets into most of our lives. This is how he makes us lie down. Now, the next thing he does, according to the testimony of the psalmist, is he restores my soul by leading me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Now, what that's describing is this. Once we get it straight who the shepherd is and who the sheep is, and he makes us lie down and say, "Bah," and the pastures are green and the waters are still and the cup's running over, we get up again and we play shepherd. We take over. And so we have to be restored. Now, when he restores us, how does he restore us? According to the psalmist, it's very, very practical. He restores us by leading us in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Now, as you apply the message of Psalm 23 to your own life, do you have a spiritual dateline? Do you have a time in your life when you said for the first time, "The Lord is my shepherd"? Do you have a time in your life when you can say, "That's when he made me lie down. I remember. That's when that happened to me. He made me lie down, and my spiritual dateline is right there." But it may be that those pastures have turned brown again, and the waters have gotten choppy again, and the cup's emptied out. Well, what's happened? Well, what's happened is you've gotten up again, and you've taken over. You've become the shepherd. And so what you need is restoration. Now, when you find that you need to be restored, how does God restore your soul? I believe he's very practical about that. I believe he restores your soul by leading you in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake, perhaps for some time, maybe 2 or 3 years. And the paths of righteousness restore your soul. That's the teaching of this beautiful psalm. Now, there's so much more to this psalm. Many people feel that this psalm shows us an adequate philosophy of life because it says, here's the key to living. The Lord is my shepherd. He maketh me to lie down. That's the key to life. If you want to have the green pastures and still waters and the full cup, then that's the key to it. The Lord is my shepherd. You've got to learn to say that. Many people feel that this psalm gives us a philosophy also of death. A lot of people know how to live, but they don't know how to die. Well, many people feel that this psalm is showing us the Christian's philosophy of death because they say death is pictured this way. The shepherd comes into our life one last time, and since none of us would choose to die, he has to make us lie down in death so he can give us the eternal dimension. The scripture will say consistently that reality is in eternity. That the eternal part of us is the important part of us because eternity is what is real. Now, suppose you were God and you knew that the green pastures that never turn brown and the still waters that never get turbulent and the full cup that never empties, all of those things are in the next dimension and you want to give them to somebody in this dimension. How are you going to do it? Well, they probably won't choose to die. And so you're going to have to make them lie down in death so that you can give them these eternal realities that are permanent. Many people feel that Psalm 23 is picturing that. It's the philosophy of death. He maketh me to lie down so he can give me these eternal realities. Many feel also that this psalm gives us a philosophy for failure. A lot of people know how to live, and some even know how to die, but very few people know how to fail. Many people live with the fear of failure and absolutely cannot cope with failure when it comes. Well, I believe this psalm even shows us how to fail. Failure is merely a matter of coming to the shepherd and saying, "I need to be restored." And so he takes the crook end of that staff, and he restores us. And again, he restores us by leading us in the paths of righteousness that glorify him, perhaps for some time. And those paths of righteousness restore our soul. There's so much more in this psalm, but we're just surveying the psalm. Once he has made us to lie down, there are some beautiful blessings that he gives us. Once he has made us lie down, now he can lead us. And when he begins to lead us, we can say that we have to fear nothing. We fear no evil because we know that he is with us. And we know that his rod, which means his ability to protect us, and his staff, which means his ability to lead us, they can be a great comfort to us. And in the midst of all our problems and trials, he can prepare a table for us. He can provide for us. The important thing probably about this psalm is the opening statement, "The Lord is my shepherd." I once heard about a family in Switzerland where they were devout, and they taught their little boy to learn to memorize Psalm 23 this way, "The Lord is my shepherd." Every night when he went to bed, his mother taught him this, "The Lord is my shepherd." She emphasized that word "my" by teaching him to hold his little finger like this. Well, they were shepherds, and one day he was shepherding on the other side of the mountain when a big blizzard came up, and he was lost for 2 days, and when they found him, he was in a snowdrift, and his left hand was frozen to his right index finger like this. And that mother knew that that boy went to meet the true shepherd, saying, "The Lord is my shepherd." I wonder, as you look at Psalm 23, is it personal with you? Can you say, "The Lord is my shepherd"? You know, it's possible for any number of things to be your shepherd. It's possible for your family to be your shepherd, for your husband, for your wife, for your children. It's possible for the company to be your shepherd. The key to happiness, according to this blessed man's psalm, is to be able to say, "The Lord is my shepherd." As long as we can say that, as long as we can say that it's present tense and that it's personal, then we can say that we expect to have the blessings of the blessed man. Green pastures, still waters, and a cup that runs over. That's a good example of a blessed man's psalm.
Oh, how true, how significant that at the moment your life ends on this earth, you can know that the Lord is my shepherd. And you can not only enjoy his presence at the end, but also every day of your life. Did you hear those descriptions? An overflowing cup, green pastures, still waters. God heaps blessing upon blessing to those who follow him as a sheep. Well, that wraps up another day of fine teaching with Pastor Dick Woodward. And I hope you've been blessed by the presence of the Lord today as you've listened. And if you enjoyed today's program, I hope you'll join us again next time as Pastor Dick takes us once again into a new lesson as he continues teaching us through the Bible. Thank you, and may God bless you until we meet again.